there are smart communities out there who have done their own research and who are looking for that innovation and connectivity with capital. So Neighbourly makes it easier to do that.
This is episode 320 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. Consistently, local communities that want to invest in publicly owned broadband infrastructure cite financing as one of their biggest challenges. Our guests this week are working to overcome that challenge by making investment in municipal bonding more accessible to communities and the individuals who live in them. Jace Wilson and Lindsay Brannon are from Neighbourly. That's a firm that's working with local communities looking for ways to fund projects such as open access broadband networks and other public infrastructure projects. They're simultaneously opening up investment opportunities for individuals and entities interested in advancing those projects. In this interview, Jace, Lindsay, and Christopher discuss how the publicly owned open access model suits their mission and why they're pursuing that mission. They also talk about how this type of financing can overcome some of the challenges more traditional approaches take because the investor and the subscriber overlap. You'll learn about a recent example of a project in Vermont and a new program they've developed to jumpstart local efforts. Whether you're looking for tools to help you fund your community's project or are interested in an investment that emphasizes local self-reliance in a variety of ways, check out neighbourly.com for more about the firm, their approach, and the different types of projects they help develop. Now here's Christopher with Jace Wilson and Lindsay Brannon from Neighbourly.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. And I'm here today talking to Jace Wilson, CEO of Neighbourly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris.
And it doesn't end with Jace. We also have Lindsay Brannon, the head of public finance for Neighbourly. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us.
So I'm very excited for people to learn more about what you're doing. I think people have a better sense now, in part because of an announcement that you've made that we will cover later in the show. But when I first heard about you guys, I had no idea what you were up to. So Jace, can you start by explaining what Neighbourly is?
Neighbourly is a fintech company. We connect communities to capital. It's a mission to modernize public finance, which is the billion-dollar a day market that builds vital public projects like schools and libraries and parks. And we think it can and it should be updated to serve communities that want to own their own networks and communities that want to build their own microgrids so that they can own their own energy while decarbonizing their planet. We see a future in which those communities can responsibly borrow exactly what they need when they need it, using the humble municipal bond as an instrument to do so, and the bedrock of the community capital stack, and that investors can get direct access to world positive investment opportunities.
Lindsay, what else would you add to that description of what Neighbourly does?
We help fund these transformative world positive projects. Jace mentioned microgrids and broadband, and we're very keen and focused on resilient infrastructure, education, housing, transportation, projects that will really redefine how cities operate. And we do this through that humble municipal bond at Neighbourly.
I think some people who are listening might be thinking, well, we have hundreds of municipal networks. We have the humble municipal bond. What is Neighbourly doing? I mean, what's sort of the problem that Neighbourly is solving?
We make it easier and less expensive and less complicated than the vast majority of municipal issuances that have financed municipal networks today. And we've studied them all. And we've come up with, pathways for communities that want to build and own and operate their own networks to do so without having to raise taxes in every situation. And the mechanisms that we employ help to make better access for both sides so that, a community that might not have been able to access the market any other way or was being told, through various shades of fear, uncertainty, and doubt from experts or people looking that don't have a vested interest in the community owning its own network, that they shouldn't use the multi-trillion dollar municipal market to help build their network. And we try to work for such communities that might not have had access to the capital markets in a direct fashion.
Jason, in my past conversations with you, you used a couple of examples regularly in terms of how things used to work. I mean, this is a relatively newer phenomenon relative to the ancient municipal finance market.
You're right. You're right, Chris. It's a 2-century-old market that helped build many of the projects that helped make our nation great in the first place, and that helped set up our nation as a sort of rich tapestry of self-reliant but interconnected places. And, you know, it's a mechanism that we pioneered in the United States and that we used to build the public institutions, but also the roads and the sewers upon and freshwater projects upon which we built our cities. And, you know, we look at it and say, well, it's kind of crazy that, you know, we built this mechanism that helped these communities, you know, bring up the infrastructure that they need. And then we look at the internet and we think of it as sort of the global brain, and what you do at ILSR and the movements of Entry Point and everybody that's building open access networks as the correct model to sort of, you know, make sure that the internet can be offered as something like a public good. To us, the municipal market is a solution. And if you look at the highways and the roads that we built as a nation, you know, it's the equivalent model. We built tens of billions of dollars into the heavy lifting of the internet to get it to where it is. But if you look at the equivalent, like we think of the internet as the 21st century equivalent of fresh water, and that we need to be thinking about it as our responsibility to make sure that everyone has access at the community level. It was the equivalent that we built all of the highways and all of the local roads, and then we told, you know, all the Detroit companies, like, you know, Ford and General Motors, we need you guys to build the driveways and maintain the curb cuts and charge us every month to do so. It doesn't make sense that the internet runs the way that it does today. So we think the municipal market can be a solution, a helpful solution in that.
Sure. And I want to just ask Lindsay, one of the impressions I've had from the and interacting with Neighborly's team is that there's a lot of people that have a lot of opportunities. You have a lot of sharp people on your team. And Lindsay, I'm just curious, you know, what made you want to join Neighborly? What would you see in terms of the promise of it?
It really appealed to me. Neighborly is very much an innovator and stands out among in that regard. And I wanted to be a part of a company with other bright, motivated people who had very diverse backgrounds. And I think that that's where Neighborly really shines. And I think we are, you know, helping modernize a 200-year-old market that really needs that innovation. And so I think the opportunity to do that, along with focusing on smart cities and projects that will help future-proof our cities, I wanted to be a part of that, and I believe that you know, Neighborly is a leader in that space. So that really motivated my decision to join.
And that really brings us right to, I think, one of the key points, which is that Neighborly is really focused on smart city type stuff. The two things that I get the impression are municipal broadband, and in particular open access, which we'll come to after we talk about the focus on municipal broadband broadly first. Also the smart grid type projects. But I also wanted to just note that we haven't really fully gotten into the problems of municipal finance. And that's something that, Jace, I've told you before, I want to have you on for a dedicated conversation about that. So if people are sort of still not entirely sure, first of all, you can see really excellent presentations from Neighborly online, but we're going to talk about that more in depth. Today, though, we really want to get to exactly how Neighborly is focused on municipal broadband and an exciting announcement. So just briefly, Jace, why municipal broadband? Why is that such a focus for Neighborly?
Smart city, right? And, you know, we've been tracking very closely with the smart city movement since it came about initially as like a sort of a marketing device among technology companies that, you know, selling into governments, that you know, the old adage of no one was fired for choosing IBM,
yes.
You know, to overcome that is to say, like, well, it's a smart decision to, you know, to choose this other thing, right? So, but then it's evolved into a real movement. And it's one that we're very personally and very passionate about at Neighborly, because we have this kind of strange view of what are cities and what are communities. We think of them to some extent as macro organisms that we sort of collectively co-create and then inhabit and then become, you know, the results of how well they're wired. And we think that, you know, in the 21st century, they're increasingly becoming self-aware. And this is through the sensors that are, you know, the ones that are embedded in the cityscape, the ones that we carry around, that collect thousands of data points, you know, every second to send back to somebody somewhere. And that, you know, you can see the internet as something like a central nervous system in the wiring up of a global brain. The connection between the scale of connection between the human brain with all of its synapses and, you know, and the global brain is the wired community. And at this scale, we think it's very important that, you know, communities are able to own and access their own information. The differences to us are striking. The recent absolute deplorable Verizon throttling California firefighters in an active blaze, right? In a disaster situation like that, you know, compare that to what's going on with the Ammon network, where, you know, they organize, you know, collection and throughput of data around gunshots. And, you know, these are two extreme examples of differences of how these things can go down. So,
right. I should note just briefly, I don't know if Ammon's gunshotting has really been used. I'm not sure how many gunshots there are, just to, but it's they're perfectly set up for it, just to throw that out there.
If there is one, you know, the network knows what to do, right?
Right.
That technology, hopefully, that idea and that way of thinking can hopefully be, you know, scaled up and out to other communities where there might be more gunshots, you know, where it could help, right? But these are, you know, extreme examples in disaster situations, right? There's countless other examples of how these things can be actively serving this sort of conceptual macro organism as it becomes self-aware and as, you know, people become to rely on it. And we think that the internet is the 21st century's bridge between, you know, our communities and economic opportunity. And it's also sort of a bedrock starting point for us to think about layering up and out additional smart, intelligent, self-aware solutions for communities to become increasingly resilient. So it was a good starting point for us that we're very passionate about.
And Lindsay, you have a big history with public finance. And so, you know, one of the things that strikes me is that if your main focus was bridges, you might have less enthusiasm from people. But focusing on broadband seems like it really fits with your goal of getting people more engaged in the whole municipal finance and any really local governance prospect.
Yeah, definitely. We share like you at ILSR, that commitment to work with like-minded communities, which is very widespread throughout the United States right now. And, you know, there are smart communities out there who have done their own research and who are looking for that innovation and connectivity with capital. So Neighborly makes it easier to do that. And I think that's where it starts, with that commonality and desire to build broadband, and believing in the open access model is something key to the process.
Well, tell me specifically, what is the difference? I mean, what do you do differently from your competitors, aside from, you know, you'd certainly say you're more efficient and you're less costly, but from a person who isn't deeply familiar with public finance, how are you different?
Yeah, so we really help engage with the community and help communities think about, from beginning to end, the financing solutions that they need to build an open access broadband network. A lot of the time, the financing piece is brought in at the middle or the end, rather than at the beginning, which really helps make it more successful and is also a way to engage with the community to build demand and map out where that might be within the community to really engage from beginning to end. And so our company is not only thinking about that entire lifespan of the broadband process, but we're also tapping into our neighborly global capital network, as well as being a technology company. So we have that span across those three areas, which really helps to bring a full solution essentially to these communities.
Okay, so one of the communities that my listeners are familiar with is Burlington because of its municipal network. Now, you've also been involved in a recent investment in Burlington, and I thought it was really illustrative of what I find most promising about neighborly in relation to broadband. But can you just briefly describe how you sold the bonds for Burlington?
Like you mentioned, the Burlington, Vermont transaction was the use of the bond proceeds was for bike paths on Lake Champlain, and was really a community project that is similar to broadband, where your users are utilizing that bike path, you know, every day on their way to work or on the weekends. And so that infrastructure and network of paths and roads was very critical to Burlington to redevelop. And so we sold bonds in $1,000 bond denominations. And so that's typically lower than the $5,000 bond denomination. And so we offered those bonds to potential investors on neighborly.com. And so we allowed the community to tap into that investment opportunity directly through our website. And we did, in addition to that financing piece, we marketed throughout the community, used bike share ads on the stations there, and really got everyone in the community engaged, even up to the mayor level. And having that community initiative to revamp the bike paths, was something that was very important to them. And so having it be something where the community feels empowered to change that and to be a part of it is something that was really powerful to see.
I agree. And when I learned about this in Maine, when I was on stage with Jace, I try to keep my jaw off the floor because it was just so exciting, the idea of citizen engagement and then making it up an opportunity for them to purchase the bonds. And having that a part of this whole process of thinking about an open access network, I think it's worth noting something that you did say earlier, Lindsay, which people might have not understood the import of, but you're making it possible for cities both to sell bonds locally as part of the citizen engagement, but then you can also place the rest of the bonds the same way anyone else would. So you're not guaranteed, or you're not necessarily expecting the community to buy 100% of the bonds.
Right.
Jace, let's bring this back to open access, and then we'll come into your announcement. But why open access versus a retail model, for instance, which has certainly been successful in places that have gotten often more attention than the open access model has?
You know, the community says, okay, well, it's our infrastructure, and ISPs, please come and compete to serve our community members. And it's through this way that, you know, we thought that it could probably be the best model over time to help make sure that everyone gets some type of access, and that there's different, you know, services provided for different types of access and different use cases. And that, you know, it most closely resembled how we would have approached, if we did energy, community energy and interconnected energy systems from first principles, starting from scratch. Suppose we're leapfrogging like the old infrastructure and just doing it out of the box. Like, this is how we would do it. It would be, you know, you could essentially show up and say, okay, well, today, you know, the rates are best over here. And, you know, in that case, there would probably be some type of algorithm that would be, you know, optimizing on what's the best available rate for us to see the frustration about how the telcos and cable companies that were sort of accidentally, you know, bestowed the opportunity to run sort of local oligopolies in the internet when the internet evolved in the United States. to see them sort of, you know, get in the arena and have to compete with each other. And then, you know, having upstarts in the community that want, you know, access to the ability to serve the community, that, you know, continues to keep them on their toes, that the spirit of American capitalism, right? It struck us as a model that would be best for everybody, except maybe, you know, the telco that otherwise would have had the monopoly. And we're not opposed to other models. And we would go to these conferences that, you know, you'd be doing like a keynote talk, you know, there'd be people talking from the community about the process, the path. And we realized that, you know, each one looked like something like, you know, a Joseph Campbell style, like hero's journey, where there's somebody obsessed with the idea of connecting their community. And they go through this crazy journey, and they have to cross chasms of the unknown, and, you know, through dark forests of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, where ISPs are like, oh, you're stupid for trying to do something different. You know, just let us go ahead and continue to run the infrastructure or whatever. And then they get to the part where they need the resources the most, the financing. And like Lindsay said, you know, it was thought about as, okay, well, we'll get to that problem when we come to it, versus thinking about it as something that will happen from the outset when the time is right. And there's not a mechanism today other than Neighborly that you can, you know, push some buttons and responsibly borrow exactly what you need, exactly what you need it, starting with your own constituents and fanning out, like you said, to the global capital network that, you know, is tens of billions of dollars per year of annual bond purchasing power and desire to invest in things like community broadband.
You've kindled my interest in public finance, but as I think back to what the humble municipal bond has built, and again, I would come back to like bridges and roads and major enablers of modern commerce, it's been open infrastructure. And I think there's a good fit for that historically. But the part that really makes me excited about this is one of the challenges of open access is that it is harder for revenues to meet the costs and the debt. But the reason that that's true is because the incumbent providers can lower the price. And if people are just going to make up their mind based on the price of service for the next 6 months, the incumbents have the advantage. But if people are bondholders, if they've been engaged in the process, their thinking is different.
Exactly. Yeah, you nailed it. That's it. You know, it's the alignment of incentives. It's investing in a thing that you're helping to build, and an investment is, you know, it's financial, but it's also affinity, it's attachment. You know, if you're directly involved with it, if you buy it and understand it, and if you're going to invest in something like that or give it opportunity to invest in it, then, you know, when it comes time to do, we're talking about demand aggregation and the mechanisms pioneered by COS and used to good effect, you know, Google Fiber. And as folks started to roll out, you know, various high-speed models in the United States, hitting community against community and you know, fun competitions and helping local champions rally their neighborhoods and get everybody connected, that in that process, the extended ability to invest directly, you know, it's not going to be appealing to everybody, but it certainly is something that's going to help folks that want to see it happen become, you know, an extended form of champion, because, you know, you become invested in it, not just financially, but psychologically. And there's a really clear path to that being of service to the model, where you're right, the incumbents have huge advantage and they can act irrationally. You know, you play this out, you see it's they're charging you $100 a month, but they're only paying $8 a month or something. Like, you know, when the community starts talking about, okay, we're going to build, you know, some of their model that would not let them to be the only game in town, they say, oh, congratulations, everybody. Now it's, we're offering special, or it's $25 a month or something like this, you know, where they're still making a fortune on margin, but they were able to drop that cost. But if you have the investment in that long-term infrastructure and you have the ability to, you know, bring others into that competition, that everybody but maybe the prior monopoly, you know, gets an advantage.
Well, and it seems to me that this is an odd situation in which your financial mechanism can lower the risk of the overall project, which is pretty fascinating.
Take rate that, you know, gets extended and enhanced by folks, you know, wanting to come to the table and be a part of the opportunity.
And so now with all that as background, we get to the big announcement, which is an accelerator that you, you know, I get the impression that in some ways, Lindsay, that you're sitting around thinking, well, we really want to see these ideas in practice. We want to start iterating and working with communities. How can we make that happen more rapidly? So what's next?
Yeah, so our accelerator launched last week, and we've opened up the Neighborly Community Broadband Accelerator to not only communities, but also ISPs and community advocate groups. The idea with the Neighborly Accelerator is that we will help supercharge these broadband ambitions or projects that are currently in process by helping connect the best and the brightest in the broadband industry together and creating this ecosystem of those particular parties that are able to open up the dialogue, giving them tools, these communities tools to help push forward their broadband.
What kind of tools?
So the tools that we are helping develop with our partners are educational sessions with these leading experts throughout the industry. Our technology platform is very powerful. And so giving them access to that, helping to build what we're calling demand aggregation, as Jace alluded to, that COS pioneered that type of technology that helps bring together and map out the community engagement and the subscribers that may care about the broadband network. And we also give them the ability to create marketing collateral. And so with every bond deal that we've done, we've given the community marketing tools, you know, designed posters for them, built pages on our website to attract the community and spread the word. And also we will talk with them about how to finance. How do you build the open access network through creative financing structures and giving them access to the Neighborly Global Capital Network?
So you mentioned, Lindsay, that this already had launched. Jace, can you tell us a little bit about the reaction that you've seen?
Definitely. We're most excited. Day one, 20 communities signed up. We're about to do some big pushing on it with some friends that want to see the world work this way. So hopefully it'll attract the goal of 100 communities, but we also are really excited about the ISPs that have signed up to provide access, you know, through those networks and to operate those networks when they're built. We've had great signups from, you know, engineers that help design the networks. You know, we've been working very closely with Foresight Group on making sure that, you know, we understand exactly the range of opportunities. And we're also really excited about the local builders that are showing up and saying, you know, if this community is going to do this, then we're here to help build it. So like Lindsay said, it's not just about the finance in this case, it's about the ecosystem and building a pathway, you know, and helping them to get come together and, you know, sort of all the raw ingredients that a community would need to, you know, cook into what becomes the network that it's the most efficient form of financing that we can bring to it.
Where can people go to learn more about it and to sign up?
I think it's at /broadband, right? So neighborly.com/broadband.
Okay. We'll have a link to it certainly in the notes that accompany this show, but people could also just Google Neighborly Accelerator, I'm sure, and find it. So is this the kind of thing that if you miss your opportunity, it's gone? Or is this going to be a recurring program of sorts?
Well, the accelerator is to line up the first communities that will get to use the tools and put them to use to make their network happen. But it's part of the long-range commitment to becoming the platform of record for financing community broadband networks. And so the program that accepts the applicants that we'll work very closely with will be the first to be able to access the tools. But from there, the tools will continue to live on and the financing platform will certainly grow. And every time somebody shows up to invest in, you know, their community or, you know, there's folks on the Neighborly Capital Network that Lindsay mentioned that range from, you know, grandma down the street that wants to put $1,000 into the project all the way out to sovereign wealth funds on other continents that can't invest less than $1 million in your project, and everything in between. And every time one shows up to, you know, sign up to invest in a specific project, they find interest in other projects. So, you know, it sort of snowballs into the effect of, you know, becoming that platform of record that's enduring for community broadband finance.
So basically, these communities are getting an advanced sneak peek at tools that are going to be more commonly available in the near future.
Yeah, the tools, and they'll also get a level of assistance and attention from Lindsay and all the all-stars and the neighborly squad that probably won't be there to the extent that they are putting in, you know, working countless hours and going to bat for that community. So it's not just about getting the sneak preview. It's about the extra TLC that, you know, once the program, the accelerator program, the initial class comes through, then from there, it's more of a self-service kind of model that, you know, we'll help where we can. But the first communities will be very fortunate to have, you know, a team of all-stars and aces and wizards that are really passionate about helping them to connect to each other and to other communities and to the capital that they need to build their network.
And people have about a month until the deadline is over, and then you're going to decide who to work with after that point, right? It's going to be toward the end of September, people can still sign up.
Yeah, that's right. September 28th is the deadline for the first wave. And so you can go to our website and sign up, and we will be selecting 5 to 10 out of those applicants. And, you know, entry to the accelerator program is free. And so we believe that, you know, there's an opportunity for that connection. And we welcome, you know, those three different main buckets of parties, whether it be the community, the ISPs, or the advocacy groups, you know, either nominating their community or nominating themselves as a partner and a resource for the program.
Well, I think it'd be really terrific if you had the trifecta of a community group, a local government, and an ISP all combining in a single package. That would be amazing.
Definitely.
Well, is there anything else that we should touch on briefly about Neighborly before we end this episode and start preparing for a future episode about the history of the humble municipal bond and how some have attempted to corrupt it?
We'd love to talk your ear off and your listeners' ears off, Chris, but, you know, we look forward to coming back. We're excited to talk more about the crazy history of the humble municipal bond and, you know, how it really got its start through something that could be written up as a best-selling murder mystery. and there's just a fascinating history, but, you know, we just want to thank you, Chris, for connecting communities and helping others to connect their communities, and, you know, for ILSR for doing what you do. We're huge fans, and, you know, all the listeners, you know, we're probably biased that, you know, we thank you all for what you're doing, because you're probably here to think about how they better connect communities, and we appreciate that and want to help any way we can. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Jace, for making time today. We actually attempted to record this previously, and Skype really, really screwed us up. And I didn't want to let that go. I wanted people that are still listening to know that Skype has really infuriated me, but I really appreciate your dedication to getting this interview done.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks very much. We really appreciate it.
That was Christopher speaking with Jace Wilson and Lindsay Brandon from Neighborly about the firm, their model for helping local communities use municipal bonding to fund infrastructure projects, and the new accelerator program that's focused on broadband infrastructure. Remember to check out their website, neighborly.com, if you're an investor seeking funding resources, or if you're just curious about their work and the projects they develop. The accelerator program link is neighborly.com/broadband-accelerator. We have transcripts for this and other podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. Follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter. The handle is @muninetworks. You can subscribe to this podcast and the other ILSR podcasts, Building Local Power and the Local Energy Rules podcast. Access them wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to ILSR's monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thanks to Arnie Huseby for the song Warm Duck Shuffle, licensed through Creative Commons. And thanks for listening to episode 320 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.